Yeah, started yesterday. We had no plane to fly, so we arrived with a bus.
Hello and welcome to the Sound of Football podcast. I'm Graham Sibley, and as ever, I'm joined by Terry DeFellin.
Hello.
Yes, no Ian Bilton this week. Throw a six to start. Bilton has obviously not hit a double, so he can't join us.
It's feverishly pounding the double 20, or just above the double 20 as we speak. It's too late. You're too late, Ian. You've missed the boat.
Maybe we should stop this match play podcasting and just like go for normal rules.
Oh, I don't know. I think we'd have to put that out to the listeners and see if they're agreeable.
Nah, maybe. I don't want to become one of those podcasts that on 4:30 on the day that we produce a podcast says, recording a podcast tonight, any questions? God, bloody hell. Really, how desperate must you be for consent? For God's sake, behave yourselves. Come on.
I think that's super needy, personally.
Oh, super needy.
Asking your audience for anything is like super needy, which is why we never ask our audience for anything. We don't even ask them to listen.
I mean, it's not as if we don't trust our listeners. I'm sure they've got a load of useful suggestions, but they're not listening to us to hear what they already know about or things that they might already be interested in. They want to listen to new stuff, don't they? That's what it is.
Yeah. They don't want to listen to stuff that they already know. You're right.
Yeah.
They want to listen to fresh takes.
They want fresh takes.
Yeah. And we trust that if they feel it's necessary to contact us about something, then they can do it. They don't need us to constantly exhort them to do that.
Yeah.
Just a few lines recorded back in 2012 at the end of the podcast about our Facebook group that we never look at. Twitter, which is now basically your own personal fiefdom, and not mentioning our Instagram page that I don't think anyone's looked at, including me, in God knows how long. Yes, we have an Insta page. We really do.
Oh, yeah, we're all about the socials, us. We are.
Oh, yeah. We're massively into engagements.
Well, usually at this time of year, this part of the season, we're a few games in, but usually everyone's moaning, aren't they? Everyone's having a good old gripe because round about this time, we should be having an international break. Now, just as the season's just getting into its stride, a couple of games under a belt, and then all of a sudden we all stop and go and play some Nations League or have a qualifier for some loser tournament, don't we?
Yeah, we do. But not this time, Graham.
No.
Not this time.
Not this time. Not this time because of the unique way that the World Cup is this year. And we've had to squeeze it all into November. It's got a bit fatter. Yeah, it's added a day, isn't it, now? Yeah. The Qataris look like they got their wish. It's only Ecuador, isn't it? They don't mind going out there a day early, do they? So what that means is that we've actually lost a couple of the international breaks. I think we've only got one international break, I think, before the World Cup.
Indeed.
So it's constant club action, which is great because the club football's been brilliant, isn't it? And this weekend, all the football happened. So much football happened, they couldn't even fit it all in. They've got Liverpool and Man United tonight as we're recording.
Mm.
Excitement is building for that one, isn't it, Terry?
You, the listener, know what happened, which, yeah. I mean, and I envy you because... I mean, we're all... It's a bit of a powder peg. Or even a powder keg. It's a counter peg. Liverpool v Man United right now is a bit of a counter peg. Am I right, Graham?
Yes, it's a complete counter peg. But given all the results that happened this weekend, I'm not going to make any predictions on that. I mean, this is why we don't make predictions on this podcast, because Leeds-Chelsea, would you have picked that out? Would you?
What a game.
What a game. What a fantastic game it was.
No. But I wrote the preview, didn't I? I couldn't have seen that coming. I alluded to the fact that Jesse Marsh felt, literally felt, that things were getting better.
Yeah.
But I don't think even he knew, could have known, that they would have got 3-0 to Chelsea better. and not a kind of Beelzebul chaos club, we're going to play like Ajax from the 70s for 75 minutes and blow them away and then be complete rubbish for the next 15 minutes and keep them at bay. In a kind of systemic, efficient, process-driven, the better team beating the not-so-good team, 3-0. No arguments fair and square win. Quite strange for Leeds.
Definitely, definitely. And of course, I think you also picked out in your preview about Jesse Marsh not afraid to do a bit of the old shithousery and a bit of the chicanery there, because first goal comes in, and what does he do? He runs out of his technical area, down the touchline, giving it the fist pumps. Yes, he had that celebration planned, didn't he?
Yeah, absolutely. He is a huge... This is a stereotype. I'm going to invoke it anyway. But sports coaching in the United States is incredibly sophisticated. And of course they do the mind games. They think all of this stuff through. Jesse Marsh is definitely of that. I mean, he's got an association with the Red Bull thing, and so I'm a bit... But he does appear to be quite a likable human being by common consent. And I thought he had a bit of a rough deal with it at Leipzig, because even though he came from Salzburg, the Leipzig system was supposed to be like the Red Bull system of playing. But Julian Nagelsmann came along and changed all of that. And so when they got Jesse Marsh in, he was like, well, okay, well, we're going to play like we play at Salzburg. And we said, well, we're not very good at that. And then so it all went wrong. He lost his job and Domenico Tedesco took over. And I was pleased that he went to Leeds, because I thought, I think he's going to get the emotion of that club, the unique emotional signature of that club, and exploit it if he can stick around long enough. And, you know, we saw that, I thought, yesterday. We saw the cementing of the relationship between Leeds and their coach. Even though I've got no massive like or love for Leeds, but it did feel good. It felt proper. It was a good football game, that, and a good result for football, especially for English football. If you like the Barclays, it was great stuff.
It certainly was. And game of the weekend, I mean, our own clubs aside.
I think that actually game of the weekend goes to Newcastle versus City. I thought that was a fantastic game of football because it was just so open and it was just so even.
Yeah.
I really, really enjoyed that. But I mean, you've also, you know, got to give credit to Fulham as well. That was fantastic performance as well, in England at least anyway. But just about in terms of performance and achievement of the weekend, yeah. Leeds v Chelsea, hands down, that's the game. In terms of overall entertainment and fun and larks and Barclays, it's got to be Newcastle versus City, even though Jan will not like me saying that.
Yeah, he won't, yeah. But I suppose it just goes to show, best league in the world, isn't it, Terry? I mean, like, you know, it is obviously, it is objectively the best league in the world. Look at those performances. You just can't deny it anymore. And then you compare it to something like the Bundesliga, and 10 times in a row winners Bayern turn up and win 7-0 away. And it's no better in France. No better in France. You've got PSG going to the side that last won the title 2 years ago and winning 7-1 on their home patch, scoring a goal within, 6 seconds or something? Something ridiculous,
yeah, crazy,
like that.
Isn't it? Yeah.
Yeah. So really, all eyes should be on the Premier League now, because there's absolutely zero entertainment to be had in Central Europe, isn't there? Isn't there?
Well, you know, I mean, I am going to disagree with that, but I know what you're saying, because I mean, in Germany alone, we had some cracking games of football and some cracking results. But you do, yes, have to look beneath the top team. I mean, it's worth pointing out that for a short while over the weekend, Union Berlin were top of the Bundesliga, and until obviously Bayern came along and slightly went there. I mean, like you had, I mean, this was in the box set as well. Union Berlin versus RB Leipzig, two clubs diametrically opposed to each other in terms of philosophy, antagonistic towards each other, not just in terms of their ownership philosophy. Union Berlin, fan-owned, 100% fan-owned. RB Leipzig, energy drinks firm-owned. Union Berlin, hugely fan-driven. RB Leipzig, like, see fans as customers. You know, Union Berlin, recruitment based upon pragmatism, based upon sustainability. They're bringing in players that are either discarded by other clubs or, dare I say, journeymen, and putting together a system of play that works for them, and then able to be able to replace them and interchange them, having a squad that's able to just simply say, right, okay, we need a fullback change, so here's another fullback, and not being at, no, there's no squaring off. There's no square pegs in round holes when it comes to Union Berlin. And when you consider that this is only their fourth season in the Bundesliga after having never really been in the top flight of German football, it's an extraordinary achievement what they're doing on a fraction of the money that they're paying out by comparison to clubs like, certainly like Leipzig, certainly like Dortmund, certainly like Leverkusen. and they won. They won that game, and they went top of the year. They didn't just win it; they won it properly. They were convincing winners. It was a superb performance. And I would argue, as I did in the box set, that Union Berlin succeed because of the German 50+1, the German fan ownership philosophy, rather than despite it. And I think that there's lots of great stories in the Bundesliga to tell, and I'm sure that's the case with other leagues too.
Well, Union's success, it's not just a streak, it's not just a lucky run, is it? Because, I mean, they're in Europe this season, aren't they?
Yeah, and they've got better. I mean, the first season up, everybody said that they would be relegated, and everybody was wrong. Well, at the end of that season, you looked at them and thought, okay, they're playing functional football. It's not terribly attractive, but it's perfectly good football, and that's why they stayed up. There was no chaos about what they were doing. They were, dare I say, ruthlessly efficient in the way that they played football. And each passing season, they've got better. And the way that they started this season now, they could be even better. And who knows, Graham? It's early days, but who knows? Maybe they could qualify for the Champions League. Maybe. I don't know. Their squad may not be that quality. But, you know, there's clubs. Look at the usual suspects for that. Bayer Leverkusen, they've had a terrible start to the season. They're second bottom with no points. Now, Hoffenheim have been okay. Freiburg are to worry about. Mönchengladbach, they look okay. Dortmund have been hilarious. And Wolfsburg are like 14th at the moment. I know it's super stupidly early days, but so far Union have done nothing to suggest that they might stop being good at playing football. While the other clubs that I've mentioned have done plenty in the last few years to suggest that they might stop being good at the football, with the exception of Freiburg, who have been awesome. So it's not out of the question at all. It's not likely to happen, but I wouldn't be surprised.
What we've also seen in Germany in recent years is teams that have been historically sides that have gone into the Champions League have ended up getting relegated, spending time in the second tier. So you're getting teams like Union and Freiburg taking full advantage and pushing on into Europe and beating teams like Leipzig, who are there in the Champions League this season as well.
Absolutely. I mean, look at recent Bundesliga teams to play in the Champions League. Werder Bremen, Stuttgart, Schalke. All of these teams have recently spent time in the second division and are not expected to come anywhere near that sort of shake-up anytime soon, because they've taken massive hits. So there's tons going on. I should acknowledge that Werder Bremen's the stunning comeback from 2-0 down to win 3-2 at the Westfalen against Dortmund on Saturday, just in case people think that I'm airbrushing that out of existence. It did happen, and congratulations to them for absolutely stunning result. Fantastic achievement. But it just underlines what's going on in the Bundesliga that makes it so exciting. I mean, even Eintracht Frankfurt, remember, Europa League winners, currently 15th with 2 points, but they will be playing in the Champions League this season.
Yeah, didn't have a great time in the Super Cup final either. So,
yeah,
a bit of a hangover from that Europa League win, I'm guessing.
Yeah, they started slowly this time last year, to be fair. So maybe that's what's happening again this time. So, you know, we shall see.
But this weekend, it's the battle of the top two. So obviously, Bayern will have some genuine competition this weekend when they play Gladbach. In the real Clásico, isn't it?
The actual Clásico, yeah. Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I mean, Gladbach had a good result against them last year. They knocked them out of the cup 5-0. So there's potential there. But the way Bayern have gone, I mean, it's just been absolutely phenomenal. It's like, obviously, Mane's come in and it's been seamless. And they've got De Ligt in as well to help bolster the defence. And it's almost as if actually Robert Lewandowski was holding them back. And now that he's gone, everyone else is free to score.
Do you think this is what it actually is? Is that Bayern are so sort of desperate to prove that they didn't need him anyway? That they're just going, right, no, just go out there and score a shitload of goals. Prove that we don't need him anyway.
I mean, I think that Bayern Munich's football is so refined now that they could actually, you know, do that just simply for those rather petty reasons, just to amuse themselves. In all seriousness, however, when you've got Lewandowski and as prolific as he is, then you probably are finding yourself and encouraging yourself to play a specific way. And then when he's not there, you then do have the freedom, and you've got this bevy of hugely talented footballers to work with that you can actually then, you could diversify your tactics and do all kind manner of fun things. And especially then if you've got Mane, who's going to come in to fill the breach goals-wise, then...
Yeah. I mean, in a certain respect, happened at Dortmund, didn't it, when he left there? There was a lot of younger players coming through there, but it did diversify their attack a bit, didn't it?
It did, but it diluted the quality of the squad at the same time, unfortunately, yeah. And it wasn't as successful. Bayern have obviously, you know, they, as I said, they got money in. You're also seeing the emergence of Jamal Musiala this season. And if you've not watched him yet, Graham, then, you know, no. Do take a moment to watch him in the Gladbach game. He's the English guy who is German, who's born in the UK, but moved to Germany at an early age. And could have played for England, but chose to opt for Germany. And he is absolutely amazing and is growing into the role now and is going to be an absolute star. Definitely one of Bayern's most important players, and he's like 12. So, I mean, also listeners can look out for him in the World Cup, where I'm sure he will feature. So the moment you think, oh, they've lost Lewandowski, will there be this little bump in the road for them? No, if anything, they seem to have bloomed after Lewandowski.
Well, it's not been so bad for him either, because he did score, didn't he, at the weekend?
He scored twice. Yeah, he won in the opening minute in ITV4's first La Liga game. And it was an absolute treat. It was 4-1 was the final score, but good away win for Barcelona at Real Sociedad. And it was a cracking atmosphere in that stadium. It was a really, really good... I don't know if you saw it, Graham. It was a really exciting game of football. Great atmosphere. And it was a lot closer than the scoreline suggests. It sort of, you know, it got a little bit much. Is that Ansu Fati is the story of that game, because he came on as a substitute. And Fati has had so many problems with injuries in the last couple of seasons that Xavi is playing him very sparingly still. But, you know, he completely transformed the game and they just ran away with it after that. That was a tremendous performance. We've spoken a lot about the ethics of the way Barcelona do things, and we speak a lot about the ethics about clubs and the way they do things. But purely from the point of view of watching the football, Barcelona are going to be good this season.
Are they going to be as good as Villarreal, though?
Oh, man, that was a game. That was a great game. I mean, yes, they'll be better than Villarreal. They've got better players, but I don't think they've got a better coach. I mean, Unai Emery completely did Simeone there in a way that Atleti do, and I know that Atleti have changed, and I know it's kind of like, oh no, don't talk about Atleti because like they're super defensive all the time, but you know their default setting is to play, you know, with a relatively low block and to invite teams on them, and Villarreal just said, well, yeah, we'll do that, that's fine, we'll play it that way, but we're not going to rush. So we're just going to hang around here. We're the away side. We can just hang around here on the halfway line, just passing the ball to our back four and see what you want to do about it. Eventually, Simeone, he snapped. He made a tactical substitution, went for it. And then Villarreal went at the other end and scored. And then the guy who made the defensive error as a consequence of the change in tactics got sent off. And then they scored a second in the last kick of the game, it was. And it was hilarious. I mean, like those Villarreal players were walking off, twirling their moustaches in a villainous fashion that reminds you of the heyday of, well, Atleti under Simeone. They were completely outdone. And Atleti fans were deeply, deeply unhappy about it. Because, I mean, unsurprisingly, because they were beaten. You felt as though they were being beaten, not beaten by their own game because of the possession. But certainly, you know, their sort of one of the fundaments of their football was kind of undermined in that moment. And it was a significant performance and result for me.
Of course, La Liga was a week later in kicking off. So they're only two games in. So there's even less to really analyse about the start of that season. But let's do it anyway. I mean, Villarreal under Emery did really well last year. Never really challenged for the top places, but certainly did enough to keep them interested in the hunt, especially for a Europa League place, because we know how much he loves it.
Because Unai Emery, remember, he had the opportunity to go to Newcastle last season, didn't he? And he'd done a really good... He won the Europa League with Villarreal. And he clearly felt that there was some kind of project going on there and that this was not the right time to do it. I also wonder whether or not he was quite badly burned by his Arsenal experience and maybe just felt, well, maybe it's not. I think Unai Emery will come back to England possibly to teach Arsenal fans a bit of a lesson, because I think he's a quality coach. But the Premier League has its own, again, it's got its own kind of emotional signature. And, you know, I think you've got to be into that We've seen that with the way that Conte got it straight away. Thomas Tuchel has taken a bit of time, but he's getting it. And I don't think Emery kind of got that. This is quite ethereal. You won't find any of this. This is not analysis. This is just feelings, vibe, you know.
And Jesse Marsh seems to be doing it as well.
Exactly, as we were saying, yeah. And I think that Unai Emery wanted to play Arsenal like they were, which was this kind of upper mid-table Premier League side or upper mid-table, you know, senior European side. But of course, Arsenal's fans and Arsenal culturally don't really see themselves as that. And I think that that was where he was going. The expectations are different at Villarreal, and he was had the opportunity and the time to start building that squad up. And yeah, I mean, it's super, super early. Of course it is, but they're set for a good season. I still would suggest that it's between Real and Barca for the title, but that's partly laziness. But I also think it's also, you know, mostly experience too.
Well, it is the Champions League draw this Friday, but you're going to see a lot of teams going into that group stage that haven't really had a great start to the season. You've got to look at clubs like Sevilla, still looking for their first win. Leverkusen, 3 defeats in a row. Leipzig haven't had a great start either. All of the European group stages are compressed because they've got to get over and done with by mid-November. And so that's going to be game after game after game. And you've got all your league form to try and get back on track. What do you think is going to be the priority for those sort of teams? The teams that are not really expected to win the title, but are expected to get into the Champions League spots?
Well, I think they're going to have to sort out their league form and prioritise their league form first. Because I think what you want to be doing is you want to be getting back into the Champions League the following season. Because, you know deep down you're not going to win. Even if you might go on a, shall we say, an unlikely run to the semi-final or final. And, you know, in the way that we've seen clubs like Dortmund do in the past, clubs like we've seen Tottenham do it in the past, we've seen Ajax do it in the past, go deep in this competition when they're not expected to. But if you look at it strictly from a sort of percentages point of view, the issue of being in the Champions League is the money that comes with being in the Champions League and the prestige that comes with being in it. It isn't the act of competing in it. It's really just about being there. And so you really need to be focusing, you know, mainly on your domestic league form in order to be able to do that. Eintracht are an excellent example of this, so I don't really think have made too many significant transfers. I think everyone's quite interested to see how Mario Götze works out, but that was a free transfer and he's very much at the veteran stage. But I think they are very much taking the happy to be here approach, and just like they're just going to take the money and help to build the club and develop the club further from that, so that maybe next time they get into Champions League, it'll be through the league route rather than through winning the Europa League. So that's what they should be doing. Leipzig might be a bit of a different story because they've got some ambitions. But they, you know, they've, as you say, they've not had a great start for the season.
I just wonder, because of this compressed Champions League section, then the World Cup, and then going back into the second half of the league, I wonder if we're going to see sides that don't normally qualify for Europe push to get for those Europa League spots, or even snatch a Champions League place. I think especially in the Premier League, I wonder if a team like, say, Brighton even, puts a decent run together, even Palace going for Europe this season.
You're just being kind because you said Brighton.
I know. I think Brighton is more likely than Palace because...
Hang on.
But there is no respite for the clubs in Europe with league, then European football all the way through, pretty much until the World Cup, between now and the World Cup. So you've got that to contend with. Then you've got the World Cup where loads of their best players are going to be going and then coming back, probably deflated because, you know, World Cups would probably need a month off, which in some parts of Europe they'll get. They won't get it off here. They're still taking a winter break in Germany. They don't come back until the 21st of January in Germany.
Whereas in England, they're back for FA Cup third round day, aren't they?
Yeah.
In the traditional slot.
Yeah.
Which is insane.
It is insane. Mind you, we'll probably be coming back from Qatar quite early, so we'll have that break, won't they?
If you've got a high number of England players in your squad, then, you know, you need to be worried about that. Yeah, England are in very bad form. It's going to need a big turnaround in form for England to do anything interesting in the World Cup. So that could get nasty. So there's man management is going to be absolutely key in these situations. And you're right to point that out, that sort of like layer of clubs underneath who don't have the pressure of midweek competition to worry about, or high level midweek competition to worry about, and have fewer percentage of players that are likely to go deep in the World Cup or come back utterly traumatized from the World Cup or both. And yeah, so then you're looking at Brighton. I think that it's probably fair to say, and yeah, maybe Palace, if you want to be generous, given that both of those clubs have had relatively good starts. I think Newcastle's a club to look at, though. I know they've got a lot of internationals, but they're still a bedrock of that squad that played, you know, last season before all of this hoopla came to the town. So actually, you know, Newcastle, I think, might be a good bet to sneak a Champions League flat spot unexpectedly. It could all go really south for a lot of the bigger clubs in November, December, January time, couldn't it?
It is something that we might have to come back to with the compressed schedule and what players are going to be like afterwards.
Mm.
Obviously, Gabriel Jesus has got off to a flying start.
Yeah, but
what's going to happen when he's left out of that Brazil squad by Tite? Or what happens if he goes and plays a blinder and they win the World Cup and he's just completely burnt out after it?
Yeah, or he just doesn't come back.
Yeah, basically,
He goes back to Brazil with his World Cup and he disappears for a couple of weeks. he literally goes missing, rocks up in mid-February at the training ground with dark glasses and like massive beard, completely out of it.
And that's actually going to happen. That's us forecasting again, not predicting, isn't it?
Indeed.
This might make it even more concerning for United fans, given the start that they've had. If you were Ten Hag right now, would you be completely binning off the Europa League right now to say, well, look, let's just send the kids out to that, because really, we've got problems to fix here. Even if they do end up beating Liverpool tonight.
As we say, this fixture is a bit of a cowder peg because of the odd circumstances that both clubs find themselves in. But yeah, there's no question that United are in a dark place at the moment and they don't need the Europa League. It is difficult because you charge people, you know, entries and, you've got an obligation to try and do stuff. And the downside is that if you've been off the Europa League and you end up getting humped, oh, we haven't seen the draw, so we don't know who they're in. But this is a competition that United are expected to get, final eight, final four minimum, I would say. But really, they're not in a position to do that. But reputationally, traditional, based on their pedigree, you'd expect Man United to go well in the Europa League. So if they bin it off, it could actually end up affecting morale even worse than it currently is. So it's a difficult one to juggle. But I think if he wanted to, if there was no consequences to it, then I think he would bin off that Europa League.
Well, maybe what he'll try and do is manoeuvre himself to finish third in his Europa League group and then drop down into the Conference League, zip through, win that, silverware. Ten Hag says, look, I've brought you a pot. I did what you wanted me to. I've done a Mourinho.
I'm just Googling where the Conference League final is this year. It is Prague. So, we can all look forward to the United fans singing songs about they're off to Prague, which will get broadly imitated by other clubs around the league. I'm looking forward to that. Mind you, you wouldn't fancy them to even do that at this point where they are now.
Oh, there's still 9 days left of the transfer window. There's bound to be another 3 or 4 £60 million marquee signings to stink out the squad, isn't there?
I have to be honest, I am super impressed that they got Casemiro. I know that there's concerns and I appreciate that it's no replacement to a proper transfer policy, but Casemiro is class. He's one of my favourite players. I think he's great. And I'm disappointed that he's Manchester United, but I was also surprised. But clearly, I think he obviously felt that the wind was changing, and he gets to play alongside Fred, in that midfield, and which of course is great preparation for the World Cup for him. So that's a really good move. Whether or not it's enough to really change the culture in that dressing room and address the problems, I don't know. But I'm certain he'll be a success at Manchester United, even if he's the only decent player in that squad.
Well, United, if they do get humped tonight, they get the chance to get their first win when they play Southampton at the weekend. That's in the lunchtime kickoff on Saturday. But it's not going to be in our box set because despite not being here tonight, Jan will be writing the preview of Sunderland Norwich, which will be a much better watch. I mean, you don't want to see all that angst of Southampton versus United. They're both teams are utter toilet at the moment. So we want to stick with something that's at least got some quality about it. So, as I say, that's Saturday lunchtime, but we might not be able to watch that one, won't we? Because we'll be on, well, I'll be on my way down to the South Coast because AFC Whiteleaf are going to be playing Wick in the FA Vars. So our Indeed. First FA competition of the new club, which is going to be fantastic.
Yeah, it's going to be a great occasion. We're looking forward to that. Not too far away from where I live, so hopefully we can persuade Jan to peel off the A27 and pick me up. if we get there early to catch the game on the telly, the likelihood is it will actually be. Even I suspect the people of Littlehampton will actually not be paying attention to the box set.
No.
And be watching the Southampton game instead for some reason.
Fools.
Possibly to do with the location of Littlehampton.
The aforementioned Bayern versus Gladbach is also going to be in there that Saturday evening. And, of course, it's probably going to be a cakewalk for Bayern, but it's the top two as it stands in Germany at the moment. So should be a good game. Other things to look out for, Nice versus Marseille on Sunday lunchtime and Lazio versus Inter on the Friday night as well. But if you want to see what we put in the box set, including Forest versus Spurs. Spurs in there again. Oh, I might change that, I think, before the weekend.
I wonder whether or not can we do. But let's have a quick, after we've finished, let's have a quick review of the schedule and see if we can do a little bit better than that. But Spurs again.
Spurs again, I know.
Yeah.
And they're not even playing that great. They're still winning. They're grinding out at the moment, aren't they?
No, it's mostly narratives, isn't it, really?
Yeah, mostly narratives. Yeah. But if you want to see what we do pick for this weekend, then get along to sofpodcast.com, click on the link for the weekend box set, and subscribe. All you've got to do is put your email address in there. You know how it goes by now, and yet you still haven't done it, have you? Yes, subscribe, and on Friday lunchtime, you will receive the email in your inbox, or you can go and read it on your blog, which I don't know if you do that either. Maybe you do. Maybe I'm doing you a disservice there.
But then what can you expect? We don't get these people to even talk to us, so goodness knows how we could possibly expect them to read our content. You're busy people, and we understand that.
But that's why we do the box set, isn't it, Terry? Because they're busy, because they're so busy, and they've got to keep across everything. So this is the way you find out all the key little talking points. It's not just us saying, oh, yeah, this is going to be a great game. No, it's a bit more than what we've just said. There's actually genuine good stuff in there. So get along and read it.
And between 250 and usually 250 and 300 words per preview as well. So it won't keep you too long and we won't bog you down with sort of like, athletic style, statistical analysis stats for all of that nonsense. No. It's pure vibe and narrative.
Yeah. And you might find something out about Minnesota United versus Houston Dynamo in the MLS that you didn't know already, and you might be urged to watch it. It's an interesting time of the season in the MLS at the moment, coming up to playoff times. I'm not saying it's up to you, but it's Saturday night. What else are you going to watch, eh?
What else is going to do on a Saturday night? You'll thank us in 3 months' time when you've got no money.
And it's on Free Sports as well. Get used to it.
On that note.
But that really is all we have time for this week. So from me, Graham Sibley, and from Terry Fillon, it's goodbye.
Goodbye.
You can contact us through our website, sofpodcast.com, via Twitter, @SoundOfFootball, or on facebook.com/SoundOfFootball.
There was some good football over the weekend.
There was some good football over the weekend. Dortmund was the only one that let the home side down, really, wasn't it, I think?
Yeah. I didn't find out, obviously, about that until after I was on my way back to the bus stop from the ground. It was 2-0 up with minutes remaining. And it was only then I got this text from Nick, who, as you know, is a Werder fan, congratulating me on Palace's win.
Yes.
Some Norwegian shade right there.
That's the sort of shade you get from a country that has 4 months of darkness, isn't it?
Indeed. That was quite funny.